Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Lesbi Mommies Radio. I'm your host, Elizabeth Kaliva. Thank you so much for tuning in. Happy Monday. This is the first time I have done a live show in a while, so feels good to be here on a Monday, and hopefully you all had a day off today for the holiday. You had a great weekend. So tonight, we are talking all about sugar. I have January Newland on the show. She's going to give us a little lowdown on how sugar affects our pregnancies and our health overall. In prep for the show, I did some research online about sugar. I'm going to share a little about that with you here right now. It's pretty obvious, I think, if anybody goes outside and looks around, that obesity rates and just overweightness, if you can say that, is just skyrocketing. You just see it all over the place. And so I looked at some stats on the CDC's website. And as of 2012, the percentage of American adults that are obese is 35%, so 1 in 3. And the percentage that are overweight is almost 70%, it's actually 69%. So over two-thirds of American adults are overweight, with a third of them being obese. And 18% of children are obese. So this is obviously a problem, as there's a whole slew of health concerns associated with being overweight. So why is this going on? Why is everybody so heavy these days? And so there's one probable culprit that I could come up with, and that is our insane sugar consumption. According to some additional research I found for the show, in 1700, it's estimated that we consumed about 4 pounds of sugar per year. So 4 pounds in 1700. In 1800, it was up to about 18 pounds. In 1900, we were up to 90 pounds a year. And the estimate for today is between 120 and 180 pounds per year of sugar. So that's almost a 4,000% increase since 1700. Obviously, it's a huge amount of sugar, and we see it all over, whether it's candy or soda, or, I mean, it was just Valentine's Day, right? So everybody was eating chocolate. I mean, it's all over the place. So while this show is not going to go into all the reasons behind why our sugar consumption is so high, we're just going to talk about how sugar does impact your fertility, your pregnancy, and your overall health, and why you may want to think about kicking the sugar habit. But before we get started, a couple of announcements. Next week, I have Kristen Colley on the show from Maya Midwifery. She's going to be giving us a lesson on fertility charting and insemination timing. So that's a great show for all of you that are in the midst of making babies. And then the following week, Alice Ruby from the Sperm Bank of California is on, talking about where your sperm comes from, what to look for in a sperm bank, and how to talk to your kids about donor conception. So definitely stay tuned for those two shows. You can find us online at lesbymommies.com. My blog is there, as well as all the past shows. And all of our past shows are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Blog Talk Radio. If you're listening live tonight, want to call in and speak with our guest, the number is 646-787-1912, 646-787-1912. Just press the number 1, and that'll let me know that you want to come on the air. Let's get to the show. Let me introduce my guest, January Newland. January is a fitness trainer, yoga instructor, and nutrition coach here in San Diego, California. She teaches regularly at Barry's Bootcamp San Diego and Core Power Yoga, and works with clients nationwide through her online course, the January Wellness Sugar Detox. January specializes in fat loss, hormone balance, and athlete nutrition. She helps clients heal and strengthen using food as medicine, and educates about the ancient nutritional wisdom passed down from our ancestors. January, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So my first question always is, how did you get into this work? There's always a good story behind that. So tell us yours.
Yeah, well, I like to say that my first sugar addiction was cultivated with my baby bottle in Hawaii being filled with guava juice instead of milk, which I'm not sure which is the best at this point. But I think I grew up in a typical family that attempted good health and nutrition the best they knew how with the education we had in the time. But I can remember in high school living out of the vending machines at school and coming home to what was supposed to be healthy dinner at the time through TV dinners, but once you became a member of the Clean Plate Club and finished your dinner, there was sort of an imbalance that you could eat whatever amount of ice cream or dessert you wanted. So I think my sugar addiction was cultivated quite early in my childhood and growing up. I always have the story that my sister and my dad would just give us the entire Breyers ice cream bin, and we would just sit there with it, with zero portion control, eating as much as we wanted. And then moving out of high school and into college, I got into exercise science and physiology at Arizona State and was studying that, and sort of came out of a lot of the program with the notion that you could out-exercise your diet and work hard through sweat and balance out whatever you wanted to eat as well with that same message. And that was a lot of what was being taught at the time. So still struggled with a lot of health issues that are tougher to notice when you're in your 20s, but definitely weight issues. And I think hormone imbalances early on myself. So the natural pathway for me was to pick vegetarianism because it seemed to be so prevalent as a healthy way to go. And it is definitely for some people, but for myself, it looked like a lot of packaged vegetarian foods and a lot of processed stuff and a lot of sugar continuously because sugar is vegetarian. So that kept going for myself. And then somewhere along the line, I decided to kick it up a notch and start training for marathons because if I could run marathons and not lose some of the weight, I wouldn't be able to figure it out, was my thinking. So I was training for marathons, and that shortly ended vegetarianism because I had an instinct that I needed some protein back in my life. And once I moved that direction, I picked up on the trail of paleo eating, and more importantly, the Weston Price Foundation. Dr. Weston Price did a lot of really wonderful research on ancient societies as well as just traditional societies and how those people who didn't have a lot of refined sugar or refined products in general stayed very healthy through dental health and through general health, just fertility-wise and everything down to digestion and immunity and skin. So I moved more and more into paleo and Weston Price type eating, but still had a heavy sugar addiction, which I think you can attempt to cut down your sugar intake a little, but you need, some of us need a little more of a detox at some point. And so I started working on a way to bring this to my clients. And over the course of a couple of years of trying it on my friends and family, thankfully they let me do it to them too. Came up with my program that really helps people kick their sugar addiction, which can be the case for a lot of us. It's a neurological addiction and a physical addiction we feel after a while. So moving through that program got me to a level of health that I feel is drastically different from earlier in my life, and that's what I'm here to share with people.
What a great story. I love so many aspects of the story. First of all, you talked about the Clean Plate Club. We totally had the Clean Plate Club at my house. No eats, no treats was our rule. And it was so funny. And then you just totally brought up a bunch of memories in high school, because in high school I would eat like a cinnamon roll and a milkshake, and that was my lunch. And it's so sad that that was available to me to be eating that. You know what I mean?
That's
crazy.
The place I'd like to go into a little bit more is helping kids my age, because I didn't know any better at the time. And my dad would send me to school with a sandwich and a banana, which wouldn't be my choices now for fairly high sugar content either. But then vending machine trips. And we had this stand at our high school that was three fresh baked cookies for $1. And they were fairly big cookies, and they were called like Otis Funkmeyer or something terrible.
I
would eat them
those
every single day. And then I'm fairly sure when I got home, I'd eat cereal with sugar as well.
Totally.
So, I mean, sometimes I'm a little scared about what I actually did to my system then, but it's an intense training to ask kids to go through on their own when that's what's available to them.
Yes, seriously. Now, when we talk about sugar, most people or most of us think the white stuff, or we think of cinnamon rolls, we think of milkshakes, we think of cookies. But I know that to your body, there's a lot more that comes into play when you're talking about sugar. So talk a little bit about all the different forms of sugar as far as our body is concerned.
Yeah, and that's definitely my target, is the stuff you'd think of, because most of us are in a little bit of denial of how much of that sneaks in anyway, but there's a whole lot of different forms of it. And when you break it down scientifically, you'll get it in mostly in the form of glucose and fructose, and then sucrose, which is a combo of the two. And I've got a little chart, which I have on my website, and I send out to all my sugar detoxers, that's got 50 different names. And I've seen ones with almost 70 different names for sugar that can get really tricky and have kind of chemically names that you don't really realize. So I'll make that available to you guys as well. But it is everywhere, and it's prevalent in so many foods. And what I target mostly is, of course, refined white sugar, but also carbohydrates that are simple that turn immediately into sugar in your body. So for the purpose of my detox, and for most people that are working on something like fertility or restoring health, we do target a lot of carbohydrates in traditional form, crackers, bread, starches that break down into simple sugar right away. I'm trying to think of plenty more examples as far as like crackers go, but nothing that is a real fruit or vegetable that comes out of the ground would I term as a bad sugar or a sugar for you to target. But we work on different levels of that during the sugar detox based on where you're coming from. But yeah, everything that breaks down to glucose and becomes sugar pretty quickly within your body is what we look at when we call sugar, sugar.
Now, so why does it matter? Why does it matter that we consume that much sugar? Given is, you know, let's see, sugar cane in its raw form, or honey, or molasses. I mean, I know some sugars are better, I guess, quote unquote, better than others. But talk about why it even matters how much sugar we take. What, like, why care?
Well, going back to your reference, I had that written down as a number for you as well from the beginning of the show. We're just simply not meant to ingest that much sugar, and I truly feel that it's the reason that increase from the 1700s, which is around the time I usually say 150 to 200 years ago, is when we started industrializing a lot of our food. But that number going from 4 and even 18 pounds of sugar per person per year to upwards of our own body weight for some of us at 150 plus pounds is just, our system is not handling it well. And we're meant to be in balance with our intake of carbohydrate, which in this term kind of equals itself to sugar, and fat and protein. And we have eliminated a lot of our fat intake through the low-fat generation, which I believe to be a false prediction of health, was to say to take out fat. And we've increased a lot of the sugar, and we're not handling it well. And you can see that in the supposed advances in our medical system, which is true. We're taken care of better for longer term, but we're suffering. We have these rates of obesity that are incredibly high for the Western world that we live in. We've got dental issues that we never had as an ancient society. We've skin issues, infertility issues, which is what we're here talking about, that didn't seem to exist, along with a lot of cancers we didn't know about before, a lot of problems with children like ADHD, and things that we're just seeing new now that I think are linked in one way or another to the industrialization of food and a lot to do with sugar. We're just not meant to eat that much of it.
Yeah, it makes sense. So now getting into the fertility topic, talk about how sugar impacts our fertility, and if, given that you specifically work on hormones, talk about if it impacts hormones as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a pretty complicated topic, but to break it down easily, all of our, it's a blessing and a curse that our bodies are so completely interconnected with how they work, that you kind of can't get away with a lot when it comes to something like, oh, it's just sugar, it won't affect something down the road. But everything's so beautifully interconnected through our endocrine system, our hormone system, that this is a good thing and a bad thing in the case of overconsumption of sugar. So when we baseline eat a lot of sugar over time, or are eating more sugar than we're supposed to, which I would say you could go into the details of what it would be, but for myself, looking at the ADA recommendation of 6 teaspoons and under is still kind of a lot of sugar. So depending on whether you're working from a good baseline of health or whether you're trying to restore health. So So even at that level, 6, and then a whole lot more when we're looking at the 150 pounds of sugar per person per year, when you eat that much sugar, it creates a state of stress in your body. Upon ingestion right away of, let's say you're having a nice slice of cake, you get a big sugar hit, and the glucose goes right to your bloodstream. And that's okay, because we use glucose for a lot of stuff, so the cells immediately start using it as energy. But in the case of a piece of cake, it's a pretty high amount of sugar, and that blood sugar level can really only be about 2 teaspoons in our bloodstream at a time without it becoming more toxic. So we've got this great hormone, which often gets a bad rap, but insulin comes in and can very easily start creating storage for that blood sugar rather than letting it circulate. So the insulin will come in the case of a normal piece of fruit, per se, and move some of the glucose away. But when we eat a huge piece of cake, we've got a ton of sugar circulating. So that insulin fires off fast and shuttles that glucose away from our bloodstream quickly. And we end up getting a little bit of a crash. And you can feel this when you have some kind of sugary treat. It's usually 15 to 30 minutes where you feel pretty good. You've got that sugar high going, but then the crash comes afterwards. And in that crash, we signal to the adrenal glands to release our two big stress hormones, adrenaline and cortisol. And those go out in search of a little bit more sugar to be used to keep that constant blood sugar level even with itself. So when we're doing this over and over, a couple times a day, weeks at a time, we create a state of fight or flight in our body. And that is going to take over as the very first thing we need to handle, meaning coming out of that fight or flight stimulation of the nervous system before we do anything else. And fertility and reproduction is going to go way down the line behind getting everything else in order first. So those hormones being out of whack with the insulin spiking, the cortisol and the adrenaline continuing to kick in, those are going to really mess up that baseline of low, we want a low level state of stress before we can move on to the bigger tasks like reproduction and fertility. And then there's a lot of other tricky little pathways like progesterone, which I'm sure you know a little bit about from working on fertility. The cortisol actually takes the place in those receptor sites of progesterone. So we need that progesterone in order to become fertile and to make a pregnancy last and work well. And if you've got a high state of stress and cortisol, it's going to take the place of that progesterone. So there's a lot of other little pathways that can mess up the whole fertility process just by the ingestion of sugar. But it's a chain reaction that takes a lot of steps.
That was
a lot about all the glucose and insulin. It's kind of a tricky pathway to talk about.
You did an excellent job. That was such a great explanation. I feel like I understand that more. That's the best I've heard it explained, at least for me being able to understand all that. So, yeah, thank you. Yeah, and just like you said, the stress that it puts on your body, I never thought about that, but that's completely fascinating in it pulling or it using the same receptor sites as progesterone is fascinating.
Yeah. And it's hard to know because we feel like it's a stress reliever, and it may be in the moment, but it creates that almost addictive cycle to needing the fix, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you're so right, because it's like comfort foods, right? Ice cream and sugar often. It's like, oh, I'm upset about something, I'm going to go eat some ice cream. You know, how we use it as like a psychological band-aid sometimes. And then I remember reading, and you and I have talked before about the book Deep Nutrition from Kate Shanahan, and I know she mentions in there the addictive quality of sugar, and that there's studies that show it's more addictive than cocaine, which is crazy.
Yeah, and there's a lot of studies coming out now about that, and it's rather divided. There's people, you know, because it's a strong thing to throw out there, as addictive as heroin or as addictive as cocaine,
right.
But they are finding that those pathways are really similar, and it makes sense when it comes to the biological response that we have for it. And if you think about it in terms of our ancestors from 150 years ago to way, way back before that, as far as you want to go back, we are biologically programmed to taste sugar, and when we do, want more of it, because in those times, we didn't have the overabundance. We had just the right amount of sugar. So let's say your hunter and gatherer ancestors came across a beehive where there was a an abundance of honey or a bush of blueberries, or even in the time of, you know, more recent history, a summer harvest where there was a lot of fruit coming off of the trees. We tasted that sugar. It tastes excellent for a reason. We're supposed to eat as much as we can in that time so that we can create a little bit of storage of that glycogen or stored glucose and be able to use it later when we don't have as much of that abundance. But on top of that, what's happened now more with the abundance of sugar that we have currently, on top of that biological response, is a neurological addiction. And this is because once we take in, there's a threshold that's being studied. Once we take in a certain amount of sugar over time and hit that threshold where we get the dopamine response, and you may have heard of dopamine as the pleasure hormone. So it opens up those serotonin or the happy hormone receptors. Once we reach that threshold over and over with the soda every afternoon or the sugary pastry for breakfast every day, the dopamine receptors actually kind of downregulate and say, I'm going to need a little more of that to hit that same level of happy. And so it does become a neurological addiction that triggers the same exact hormone receptors as a lot of the drugs that we talk about in that dopamine response. So it's tricky and it's dangerous.
No, I mean, it makes sense. Just the cravings, I remember, it was actually after reading this book that I decided to pretty much cut it for the most part from my diet. And I remember the first week it was like, I really wanted it. Like the addictiveness about it was very evident that first week. It was pretty phenomenal.
I experienced that a lot with my detoxers, and I have so much fun with it because it's the first week always where people tend to panic. It's like, yeah, I'm not sure I'm supposed to live without sugar, and I guarantee them that they're not going to die on my watch making it through the first week without sugar. But yeah, it definitely kicks in, and it's amazing how it can affect brain chemistry, which feels a lot different to us than just kind of being hungry for some chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely not a hunger. It's like a need.
Yeah.
Felt it. Now, so talk about inflammation and sugar, because I had read somewhere that sugar causes inflammation, and how that might impact a woman looking to get pregnant.
Yeah, so it goes back to that same insulin response. And again, I use insulin kind of in a bad light all the time, but it's a really beautiful, wonderful hormone that we have to regulate the amount of sugar we have in our blood. But again, when we get that huge rush of insulin from our pancreas all the time because we're eating the sugar, and then the huge crash with the other two trying to look for more sugar, the adrenaline and the cortisol, it creates a low-level state of stress, and that becomes inflammation actually in our bloodstream and in our blood vessels. And so while inflammation is another one that gets a bad rap, we want to be able to have that response. We need to, if we get a cut or if we stub our toe, that redness and that swelling that happens, to kind of heal the spot on that particular acute place is a good thing. So the inflammation response in our body is good. But combined with the sugar and then the stress that we feel just driving and being out in the world, we're combining that in a lot more sugar and a lot more stress than I think humans are meant to. And so a lot of us are suffering from that kind of chronic low-level state of stress. And you'll see that in a lot of different ways: lack of sleep, feeling anxiety. And again, that just steps in. And a fertile body, for men and for women, is kind of the ultimate sign of health, because it can be said that that's kind of a big purpose, is to be able to procreate for any animal or creature. And so when that stress level is high enough, that think back to ancient times where if we were encountering a lot of stress, so for example, going into the winter and it's snowing and we have to build a new house and there's wolves all the time, not an ideal time to create a life and nurture a brand new baby. So that's almost a good signal to our body to say, hold off until it's a little more cruisy and life feels easy and we've got an abundance of food and we're not struggling, and then we can make a life happen. So that inflammation is just the baseline start to fertility not kind of lining up for us, because the body senses that it's not the most ideal time to do so. But I want to mention quickly too that there's it's not just sugar that's the big culprit here. We have a lot of other stuff going on in the diet that can contribute to inflammation in general. And we might get to that a little bit too with the health of our digestion and our ability to handle a lot of the industrial oils that are out there. So like trans fats and canola oils, and then food sensitivities too, which I address a lot with my nutrition clients. And gluten sensitivity has gotten really popular for kind of a strange reason, but it is a big thing for a lot of people. And so if you're experiencing allergies to foods and a lot of other problematic foods like trans fats, in addition to the sugar, that's all going to create that state of inflammation in your body. So we want to reduce all of those extra foods that we didn't have around, that great-great-grandmas didn't really recognize as food, and get back to that baseline of health.
It's so funny because there's so much food out there that is not recognizable as, I mean, we think of it as food. We think of Doritos as food, but like you said, our great-grandparents would be like, what is this? I mean, you know, they taste good. They've got some really great flavor enhancers that make your taste buds really like them, but not food.
Yeah. And it's hard to have that argument with people too, because we have grown up around it and it's everywhere and it does seem like food to us. But that's why we have to set up things. I like saying that. Like if your great-great-grandma, probably not. My grandma ate some pretty junky stuff too. So I always go, great-great-grandma.
Yeah.
If she didn't recognize it, it definitely doesn't count.
Yep. Yep. Seriously. So now talk about the gut health and how it relates to sugar.
Yeah, so simply put, excess sugar in refined form feeds the bad bacteria in your belly, and you're hearing a lot more about this. It's another area of passion for me. I think it is basically our introduction to the world. So a lot of the outside world comes to us through what we eat and how we nourish our body through food. And so we need this baseline of all the good bacteria in our belly to be able to digest and assimilate the nutrients that we eat well. And when we eat sugar, it feeds the bad bacteria. It becomes food for yeast. And you may have heard of candida that can create a different state of inflammation in the body. But the sugar creates an off balance in the digestion, and that can affect not only fertility, but of course everything else that is interrelated. So immune function and skin health, and bad stuff can happen, like when those yeasts take over and the sugar continues to feed them, we can actually have leaky gut happen from things like that, where the bacteria can actually eat through the lining of the digestive system, and it gets really gross, and a whole bunch of other stuff can chain react after that. But we're used to a small amount of good sugar, meaning a piece of fruit when you came across it, which comes with nutrients. It comes with fiber. It comes with vitamins, minerals, enzymes that you need in order to break down and process the food, but also that you need to put back into your cells for functioning. Whereas white refined sugar, in addition to some of those industrial oils, they just are empty, zero nutrient foods that are treated as a toxin, because we don't recognize a plain piece of sugar with no value except that glucose hit.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So we want to feed the good guys, not the bad guys.
Seriously. Now, speaking of the minerals and nutrients, I read somewhere that sugar depletes essential vitamins and mineral stores, which I had never heard before. Is that true? Did I read that right?
Yeah, and I had to think about that one too, because it's not never as simple as it seems, but in the same way that the white sugar goes into our body and is just literally a calorie. It doesn't hold, again, the minerals that a calorie from, say, sugar in an apple would. It doesn't hold the vitamins that an apple or an orange would have, and it doesn't have any natural enzymes in it. It's just a straight, empty white calorie. So anything that we eat, we require some actual mechanical processing, so some energy just to digest what we eat. And that's where something like celery got, and I think this one is a myth, but remember hearing that celery is like a negative calorie food because it requires so much to process it. And I don't think that's entirely as simple, but in the case of white sugar, if you literally ingest a teaspoon of sugar, you're going to require some mechanical processing from your stomach, that the pancreas is going to have to secrete some insulin. And all of that isn't just as simple as using energy. It also requires minerals. Magnesium helps with cell wall transfers, and different vitamins help lubricate the cells and do all sorts of functions. And so we need nutrients to go with the food that we're eating. And when we get a food that has no nutrients, no minerals, no enzymes, we're actually pulling from our store of those things in order to get them processed. Or even worse, if we're eating something that is treated like a toxin, we're requiring our own stores of enzymes, nutrients, to get rid of it, to actually get it out of the body and handle it. So does that make sense? It's kind of tricky. Like it does, the sugar doesn't sit there and actually pull it out, but requiring it to move through our body does require stuff we've got in storage.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And obviously, if you're trying to make a baby, the last thing you want to do is deplete your vitamin and mineral stores. So it makes sense.
Absolutely.
So then talk about what happens when a woman is pregnant and how sugar can impact her pregnancy.
Well, I feel like everything just becomes amplified at that point, right? Like a lot of your own body's systems don't get shut down by any means, but get kind of put on hold as the huge task of making a life in your body happens. And so you want to have your own health pretty dialed in and feel like you feel really good on a day-to-day basis. Otherwise, the process of turning so much energy inward toward this small space that we're putting life into is going to get so much harder. So not only for big issues, like actually creating a really healthy baby, which life is wonderful and miraculous and does that for so many people, despite eating Doritos, which I've seen, but also just for your own ease of pregnancy and going through the process. Because I've seen so many of my own clients that have cleaned everything up and are feeling really good and then seem to just go through these effortless, lovely pregnancies where it's their own body kind of dialed in first. And then everything is amplified. So if we're going to continue eating a lot of sugar during pregnancy, the baby is going to feel that same, not necessarily our own insulin, but they're going to get the same blood glucose levels that we do because we share that bloodstream through the placenta, and is going to start developing the tolerance or non-tolerance that we pass to them genetically for everything that we eat. So it's a good idea to feel like you've got it pretty dialed in for so many reasons. We're sharing our body with this life that we're creating, and we want to do it with the healthiest space possible.
Now, if a woman ate a lot of sugar during her pregnancy or was overweight during pregnancy, could that lead to some sort of predisposition for metabolic syndrome or being an overweight child or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's more studies coming out about this area, which is called epigenetics. And it's fascinating that we think that we're born, and we are born with this set of genetics that's given to us, and we don't have a lot of control over it. But it's more and more we're studying that we do. Through what we eat and how we interact with the world and how we treat our bodies, we can either turn on a set of genetics that we were given or turn off if the case is that it was for an illness or a disease. If we eat well and take care of ourselves, we can literally shut down a cancer gene that may have been passed to us because we're not feeding the cancer gene with the poor choices in foods. And I think that this can happen very easily just through the very first line that we're connected to the baby that we're growing is in the bloodstream with the amount of glucose and the amount of those hormones that they're used to feeling through what we're doing during pregnancy, as well as our genetics that we just have brought ourselves up to pregnancy with. So I would like to work more and more with women earlier before pregnancy too, to take the couple years coming up to pregnancy and get all that dialed in well before. So your body has taken any of those possible genetic markers that you have for anything negative that you don't want and literally shut those off with how well you take care of your body from where you are now.
Yeah, I love that you just said that about taking some serious time, a couple of years to prep yourself for pregnancy. I mean, I think most people think, oh, I'm going to have a baby, and so I'm pregnant. Oh, I'm going to better start eating right. Or I'm going to start I'm going to start trying right now. I better start eating right, rather than thinking about really taking the time to dial it all in, because, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Good point.
And it's the same with weight loss, and I know that is something that a lot of us work on, or at least have had an issue with at some point in our lives, but it's a slow process that takes a lot of dedication, and I don't have any quick fixes for my clients. It's a very slow process. I always tell them the amount of time that it took to gain that weight, which for me was my entire teenage life growing up into my 20s, it's going to take that same amount of time, and my body's still adjusting to the better food and the better exercise methods that I treat it with now. And that's the same thing for setting yourself up for success with fertility too, is it's a slow process, but you can make the change at any point and start to work on that.
Cool. Great point. Yeah. So talk a little bit about your detox program and how you work with women.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a 2-week program, which is minimal in my eyes to make a big shift, but definitely enough for you to feel the difference and to see what it's like to loosen, to have the grip of sugar loosened around you. So I enroll people, and we put you in a Facebook group, and we have a really cool community meetup before we start, because I think one-on-one contact with me is one of the best parts of it, is having a coach and a person who's been through it, that the very highs and the very lows of actually doing the detox. A lot of times myself. And so I coach you through it, and you have great community support. And a big thing for me is having the science behind it, because I was never able to do a diet or a detox that wasn't really deeply explained to me scientifically. So I take all of my knowledge and put it into daily emails that I send you. And I tell everybody that starts, once they sit down with me, and of course, once they're paid, that I've tricked you into just doing a sugar detox, because it's a lot more than that. We comprehensively cover a lot of the nutritional details that will shine a light on labels and a lot of the food additives that go into your food. And you'll be able to make the choice from there, what you want to pick your battle to work with or eliminate.
I love that you bring a whole educational aspect in. I mean, it's one thing for people to tell you, or you know, we know sugar's not good, or we know it's probably causing our weight gain, but to really get into the science and get educated makes a huge difference. I have a little case in point, going back to the book Deep Nutrition that I loved when I read it. I gave it to like 5 different people. No one ever read it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to my dad, and I had a real concern about my dad because, as I said before, he really likes ice cream. He likes sweets. Like, he would just down sugar. And so I gave him the book, and I asked him, just read the sugar chapter. Just the sugar chapter. Just read it. And he read the sugar chapter, ended up reading the entire book, completely changed his diet, lost a ton of weight. His wife, my stepmom, same thing. They're both like, I mean, just increase their health is just ridiculous. And it really was them getting, and my dad getting for himself, the real information. For him to be educated on it made all the difference for him. So it's really cool that you incorporate that in your program.
Yeah, and it's how I felt. Like, I just can't blindly go into, like, I need to know the info. And I know there's some people who would rather me just tell them what to do, but they've at least got the emails they can look at later if they need to. And I think having that process behind it really helps. Like you said, sometimes it takes people like your dad a little bit of time to reach it on their own, but once they do, it's going to hit so well that it's mm-hmm. it's not anything they could lose because they've learned it for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, how do you support people coming off of sugar? Do you work on diet?
Yes. My sugar detox is really comprehensive on what you actually fuel your body with in order to nourish yourself for whatever your issue or your goal may be. Like we talked about with that biological and neurological, almost drug-like response with sugar, sometimes it takes a little bit of a rewiring and a different reward. So part of that is through really good other foods. And one place that is lucky for us that's been demonized is the healthy fats. And that was something that I learned a couple years back when I started eating full fat coconut products again, which to me tasted like the most decadent thing in the world that I always thought was terrible for you because of the high fat content. But one thing that's really cool about taking out sugar is that replacing it with healthy fat is like a marriage made in heaven, because your body feels nourished from the fat that a lot of us haven't been eating because we've demonized fat for so long in our society. And we've made sugar okay. So making that switch is something that really goes well for a lot of people, because it feels like you're not missing a lot with the sugar. You're replacing it with something else, which still has a reward, just not in the same dopamine receptor kind of way. It's in a nourishing way.
Mm-hmm. I love your posts on Instagram. You had, it's a Body by Butter shirt that you made, right? So yeah. Great.
It's fun because I use it as like a shock factor now for people, and you kind of have to take a stance sometimes like way out there, otherwise you won't catch any attention. But I definitely have some people in my industry, fitness and yoga, that are a little bit shocked or slightly disapproving by my consumption of fat items with coconut butter and bacon, which is a choice. You can still be vegetarian and do the sugar detox, but healthy butter and ghee, and I think it scares a lot of people. But I like that because it's a shock factor from the last 30-ish years that we've come out of, where low fat was everything. And I think that really dug us into a hole. So yeah, Body by Butter for sure.
Well, and it's so true. It's just so satisfying. I mean, after getting into all of this myself, the amount of saturated fats I have in my diet is just ridiculous. And I have no, weight issues at all. And it's just, it totally proves that eating fat doesn't make you fat. And definitely it fills that void for wanting something to satiate you. Cause we, sugars, or I mean, a lot of times carbohydrates in general, it's like you run to the crackers or the pretzels or whatever, starchy type things to fill you up. And then when you have high fat foods, you can eat bacon and you don't need anything sweet when you eat.
Yeah. And it's fatty definitely things. One of the biggest hand holding sections that I have to do, because we've been so, it's an amazing statement about culture and what commercials and labels and just an idea that is definitely not true, what it did to permeate our culture, which is that fat is bad. Fat is bad. And that fat equals body fat. So dietary fat equaling body fat, which is not the case. And if we could flip that and continue to educate that sugar equals body fat, it would change everything.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it just seems, and I have no science to back this, but it just seems in my experience that diet is so much more important than exercise. It's like you can exercise all you want, but if you're eating a lot of sugar, a lot of carbohydrates, just a lot of crap, it's not going to make a difference. But when you cut those things out of your diet, if you're trying to lose weight, for example, you cut sugar, carbohydrates out of your diet, and I mean, not all carbohydrates, but you're smart about what you're intaking, like it makes a huge impact in weight rather quickly. I mean, more so than you think you have to hit the gym 7 days a week, It's pretty phenomenal.
Absolutely. And it's a struggle for me because I still love fitness and the what I teach through personal training and yoga, but I think it does a lot of harm for people. I think a lot of people are torturing themselves with exercise that they don't like. And going back to what we've been talking about, what that does is contribute to the state of stress in your body even more. When you're doing a workout you don't like and it's cardio for a long amount of time, that's cortisol and that's adrenaline. And even high intensity interval training, which I like, that creates a little spike of that. And unless you have some serious other lifestyle choices set up with really good sleep every night and stress relief through socialization and meditation and long walks and whatever it is and that keeps you in balance, the exercise is hurting a lot of people. And I hope my bosses at Barry's Bootcamp aren't listening to this, because I did jump over that, and you definitely still need to come to class when you want to get strong. But it is my opinion that all of that should be fun and should be extra, and the fitness is 20-30% of just a normal healthy body composition, and diet is definitely 70 to 80% of our health and our body composition. And that can change if you're looking to be, you know, stronger at something or do figure competition or get in certain amount of better shape muscularly. But baseline health is for sure how we nourish ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one more question about your detox program. Do mm-hmm. you feel that the group approach is important, having that support system versus someone just trying to do it on their own?
Yeah, absolutely. The group has gone through so many different incarnations where there's people across the country that don't know each other, but that feel like really good friends once they're finished, because it's just nice to be able to pop on the Facebook group at any time of day and ask a question and have not only my support as your coach, but just see what everybody else is going through. And I know from personal experience, going through it on your own takes extreme willpower, a lot of determination and a lot of willpower. And that's great if you have it, but to have the accountability of everybody else in the group with you and the support structure of knowing that everybody's in it with you is super helpful and fun. It makes it fun rather than lonely.
Yeah. Good point. I'm guessing you provide recipes and stuff too. I mean, you have so many great recipes on your website. I'm guessing that's part of one of the tools you provide for people.
Yeah, I do. And I love to teach intuitive eating. So I give you a bunch of different recipes that I think are pretty simple, because I never would have been able to get through it if they were too complex. I'm not much of a chef. I'm working on it all the time. But recipes and then food lists. And other than that, I don't do a specific meal plan, because I think everybody's so unique in their timing and their hunger levels and their activity levels that's what I can kind of help you with one-on-one once we're rolling, is customizing that part a little bit more. But lots of good recipes in place. And I think there's over 40 now. And it's funny, because I'll still have people in my alumni group, which you join for life when you finish, and they'll pop on there and say, oh, I just found this recipe in the list and it's so good. And so I think people use it for a while, which is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. I think that's all the questions I had for you. Is there anything else you want to make sure to mention before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I think we got it all.
Yeah. Pretty comprehensive. So tell people where they can find you online.
Yeah, it's my website, which is januarywellness.com. And my blog is there, as well as those recipes and stuff are all on my blog link, and anything else cool I've got going on listed up on that.
Awesome. Definitely recommend people checking that out. She's got some really awesome recipes on there. I have used myself and some other resources. So definitely check her out at januarywellness.com. Well, January, thank you so much for taking the time to do the show. I was really happy to do this. I mean, I want to get a Weston A. Price person on the show. So if you happen to know anybody, I've tried contacting someone from the San Diego chapter and I didn't get any response. So I would love to do a whole Weston A. Price episode. So if you happen to know anybody, let me know.
We'll be able to dig somebody up at the farmer's market. They're always cruising around.
Are they?
I think
I'm
so.
Going to keep
they,
my
they
eye
have
out.
Like a chapter person that I've seen walking around with the shirt on. So we'll track them down.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to definitely keep my eye out. Cool. All
and
right. Well, thank you so much. Oh, my pleasure.
It was a pleasure.
All right. Well, have an amazing week, and hopefully we'll catch up soon.
Okay. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, everyone. Hopefully you enjoyed that show and have a little interest in maybe looking at your sugar consumption a little bit, checking out January's sugar detox program. I'm sure you will feel awesome afterwards. Yeah, that's it for me. Have an amazing week, and we will catch you next time.